Welcome to EAA Radio. I'm Wireless Mike.
And I'm Matthew, and this is Squawk 1200. And in this segment, we are joined by Trent Palmer. Trent flew in to AirVenture on a Legend Cub from Reno, Nevada, and has a very interesting story. And welcome, Trent. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So why make the long trek to Oshkosh in a Cub?
Well, for one, it's just the pilgrimage. It's one of the few events of the year that basically all of my flying friends are going on, and honestly, the trip to EAA and home are probably the most fun part, but then also getting to see everyone here, it's just like I can't miss it. And the longer trip is, that's half the fun.
Well, let's talk about that longer trip, because this one was unique for you in that it was one of your longest flights. Tell us a little bit more about that leg.
Yeah, well, so this was an interesting trip because I basically made a little bit of a detour back to Legend Aircraft in Texas to get some work done prior to Oshkosh. Some of it was that new Axis flight display. We had a few other things that needed to get done on the airplane. So I left a few weeks in advance and flew to Sulphur Springs, Texas. And it's a haul from Reno, 1,420-something miles. So it was a long one. We had it kind of planned as 2 days, but we ended up going up kind of high, catching a tailwind, and made it in one day.
Well, I was going to say, is that a normal leg for you? Are you usually going 1,400 in a Cub?
No. And that was, it was interesting. My buddy Ryan, who has the same Cub as mine, we're both flying Legend Nomads. They're equipped with a 916 IS, which is turbocharged, which opens up higher altitude flying just because our performance doesn't decline high up. And he was like, hey, I think we should bring some oxygen. And he has some oxygen bottles. It's like, no, I don't want to go that high. And that first leg, we were climbing just to kind of stay above this low layer of clouds. And we just kind of kept climbing. And all of a sudden, we're up at 12.5. And it's like, okay, if we're going to go higher, we need to start thinking about oxygen. Yep. And so we just kind of kept climbing. And we're watching both the airspeed and the ground speed just climb rapidly. And it was crazy. But basically, Durango, Colorado was our planned second fuel stop. We were able to make that in one. So it took two legs into one by going up there. And yeah, we went up to 17.5 and just hung out and did the opposite of Cub things.
Well, so if this was your first time using oxygen, what kind of things did you learn and what kind of tools did you use in order to make that safe?
I was just monitoring my pulse ox. Yeah, it was funny though. I like didn't even know how to turn on the regulator. He's talking it through me on the phone, over the radio. But yeah, it was interesting. You know, I hear pilots talk about having supplemental oxygen and how you feel more rested and better energy afterwards, and that definitely seemed to be the case. You know, I'm acclimated pretty high. My house is at about 6,000 feet, so sure. My base level is I think higher than most, so I'm pretty tolerant to
that.
To,
helps too, I'm sure.
Yeah. But yeah, it was cool.
So how high are you normally flying then? If your base is at 6, you went up to 17.5, what's typical for you?
500 AGL. I'm one of the guys that flies in the terrain instead of over it.
Gotcha.
And that's, you know, part of that just comes from that. It's a necessity in backcountry flying. My wife flies with me much more now with my Cub than she used to in my Kit Fox, but she's pretty terrified of heights, and it doesn't matter how I explain it to her that there's safety up high. It doesn't. Something deep in the back of her brain says no, so we're down low. And
so she didn't make that 17.5
trip. She wouldn't let me. No, we would. And there was a air met for that entire area for turbulence up to 18,000. And we were just up above it, like smooth ride the whole time. It was interesting. For me, again, this was not something I was ever interested in, flying that high and doing that in a Cub. I was like, it's the wrong use. But I found myself out here shopping for oxygen generators, so I have that kind of as an option.
Yeah. So how fast were you moving just to get to that, you know, condensing two legs into one?
We were showing about 170, 175 over the ground, truing out at 130. And for reference, you know, I'm on a Super Cub, in a Super Cub with 35s. A standard 18 on 35s is going to cruise at 85 miles an hour. So with us going up with a constant speed prop, truing out at 130 already is like, you know, those are numbers we don't talk in Cub world.
Wow. Right.
And then the tailwind helped.
Yeah, because you got less resistance on those tires getting up high.
Uh-huh. The drag penalty definitely declines up there. So.
Right. So now you're normally flying, you know, 500 feet above the ground, dealing with the mountain terrain and stuff. So what was the experience like flying way above the mountains and not having to deal with that?
It was funny. Well, I mean, because we kind of crossed over the south edge or the tip of the Rockies. It was high terrain, and some of the mountains around us were like, you know, 12, 12.5, 13, whatever they are. They just looked flat. It was so weird. It was like a non-event. Normally, it's like, you know, we kind of, like, when you fly east-west, and especially over in Nevada, which is where I'm based, well, we actually, fun fact, have the most mountain ranges of any state. and they all run north-south. So when we're going east-west, you kind of just like, whatever the peak of the next range is, we're there, plus 500, basically. Mm-hmm. And then you're high over the ranges in between, or the basins, and then just barely clearing ridges. But going up so high, it's just, it all felt like flat below me. So, yeah, it was interesting. Like, definitely kind of out of place in a cub when you start talking like that. Oh, yeah, we crossed the Rockies, but didn't really know they were there.
So you said you made a stop down at Legend. Tell us about what you did while you were there and what you may have picked up along the way.
Yeah, so the guys at Legend have been great because they did, like, I've been, I should just put it as I use my plane. And I had multiple holes in the tail from both sagebrush and rocks kicking up. I mean, I've got 460 hours on that thing in a little over a year.
Oh, wow.
That's perfect.
Yeah, it's been Florida to Alaska and back and all around. So I use it, and I'm not afraid to land it, you know, in brush and all that. Yeah, so the first thing he just said, let us know what patches we need to make. We'll get all those done. They also developed a new cowling and hole firewall forward. That engine's so light that we moved it pretty far forward from a Lycoming, but there's times when I'm fully loaded that I'm getting limited by CG before I am my gross weight. Mm-hmm. So the engine got moved forward just a little bit. Some tidying up of new oil lines and that kind of stuff, but the new cowling also has better placement of the coolers to hopefully help with cooling. We never really had a issue with cooling, but on the way back from Oshkosh last year, there was an extreme heat advisory in Wyoming, and we were taken off from an airport in the afternoon. It was like 8,000 MSL, and I think density altitude was like 11 or 12,000.
Oh,
it's like
wow.
95 degrees out.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was just no cooling capacity to that air. So this new cowling with some optimizations might help in that space, but... that was a big one.
Go find someplace really hot and test it out.
Oh, yeah. Hot and high. I'm sure I'll find out on the way home. So we did that. And then the last thing was the Axis, you know, flight display system. And in doing that, we took my plane from VFR to IFR.
Hmm.
And I also added a yaw dampener, which is nice.
Oh, that's excellent. So what has been the difference? I know it's been fairly a compressed amount of time since you've gotten that. But what have you noticed with this new Axis system that is interesting to you?
It's quick. Not that the G3X had any like lag or delay, mm-hmm. but it just seems like everything in the Axis happens faster. There was definitely a few things that I thought were missing, but the placement of it's just different in the Axis, just certain features or how you access certain you know, parts of the suite. But having flown it now, I guess I've got 9 or so hours in it. I think it's actually more intuitive. It's just I'm used to the old layout.
Sure.
So getting used to the new one's been a little bit interesting. And then also I got a lot more functionality now I'm running two radios with an audio panel all through that same display. So, you know, I've never had two radios before. Mm-hmm. So learning how to
switch,
you know,
back and forth.
Yeah, and it's
not
nice.
Not talk to TC on the number two when that's really your buddy.
Yeah, well.
Never done that.
Yeah. And especially with Garmin's like 3D audio where it has left and right ear. Basically the way I ran it on the way up here is my left radio stack is just my discretes, and we always have a primary discrete that we're talking on air to air, and we have a fallback in case that one gets crowded.
Mm.
And then the right side is my actual CTAFs, ATIS, all that stuff. So normally I'm just monitoring that side, but I can also hop over and make radio calls for our flight super easy. So I like wasn't excited about the second comm, but it's actually pretty handy to have.
Yeah. This is one of the things that I really appreciate having in an airplane.
Yeah.
So that gets us most of the way to Oshkosh. Tell us about that last leg getting into Oshkosh. Did you run into any smoke? How did that all go for you?
So it's funny, you know, we deal with a lot more wildfire smoke where I'm at than
sure.
over here. So that's like, I'm used to it. And I have all the apps that tell me, like, there's actually a snowmobiling app, or well, I should say snow app that I use in snowmobiling season. But they have the best smoke overlay of any app I've found, and it has a really good forecast. So we were watching it and kind of timing our approach. But we came in on Saturday. It was a pretty smooth operation. I say smooth. Traffic-wise, it went smooth. It was kind of rough out. My wife ended up getting a little nauseous on final even. But, overall, the flight went pretty great. Honestly, it's like with ADS-B and everyone being equipped, it seems like the Fisk approach has gotten so much better.
They do such a great job.
Yeah, the controllers are incredible. And really, to me, the hot spot of wherever the transition point or entry point is for the arrival, that's kind of the only scary part. When you got all the moths going to one flame.
Yeah.
But once you're in the little like Congo line, it gets pretty easy. So it was a good one.
So let's talk about where people can connect with you and with your plane. Where can we find you here on the grounds?
I'm actually done with all my meet and greets and stuff, so I'm just going to be a spectator. So if you see Great. Me, you know, throw me a high five. I don't have any formal plans, and I'm going to try to keep it that way because it's been quite a week.
You get to be a pilot now.
I do, and a spectator.
Do that pilot
so.
Stuff.
And but if they want to see your airplane, is that available to be
seen? It is. Yeah, that is in the Garmin booth right out front. So look for the red, white, and black Garmin Cub.
Well, we do appreciate you coming in and sharing your fun adventures with us, and we hope to see you in the future. Yeah. You're listening to EAA Radio.